Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Greetings, genies everywhere, and welcome to Extreme Genes, America's family history show, and ExtremeGenes.com. I am your congenial host, Fisher, on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. You know, while we do this show each week and try to bring you the best experts in all kinds of areas, we also love hearing your family history stories. And we often talk about how important it is to interview the seniors in your life about some of those happenings. And you should know, I practice what I preach. And recently, I tracked down a 90-year-old woman in California who, in 1947, was a stowaway on a cruise ship to Hawaii out of San Francisco, along with three other young women, including my mother. Yes, dear old mom, who passed in 2010, told us about this adventure her entire life. She was 23 at the time and co-host of a talk show on KNBC Radio, now KNBR in San Francisco, called On the Town. It was on several times a week, and she and her radio partner were among the dozens of people invited to attend the send-off of a businessman named Edmund Sahadi. Well, while at the party, my mother and her friend met two sisters who were professional dancers. The foursome hit it off, and according to the newspaper accounts, either missed the ship's whistle that indicated it was time to leave as the ship was about to depart for Hawaii, or they simply got so caught up in touring the ship, the next thing they knew, they too were on their way to Hawaii. But my mother's story differed from the newspaper accounts. She'd always maintained that the girls had actually hidden in a lifeboat and remained there until well after they saw the Golden Gate Bridge pass overhead, or the Oakland Bay Bridge, depending on the day. So my dilemma was, which account was true? One version suggested they were accidental stowaways, while the other version meant they were clearly intentional stowaways. In both versions, the man whose party they attended paid for their tickets, and all was well. It wouldn't have been unusual for my mother to exaggerate a story like this. As I was in the process of writing my mother's history, I was working on this story, and it occurred to me that perhaps, maybe, I could track down one of the other stowaways and get her version. Maybe someone was still around who could set the record straight. Well, someone is. And so I have. Her name is Terry Chafee, age 90, who still lives in San Francisco. Her sister Dee Dee, who was also part of this fearsome foursome, is also still with us at 89. Both still work part-time in real estate. Well, last week I interviewed Terry, thinking I would record our visit for my own personal use. But she was so vivacious, and her version so much more detailed than any version my mother had ever told me, I thought you'd find the whole thing as entertaining as I did. So today, you'll hear two segments on this crazy happening from 1947, with many facts I had never heard before, including a few that made me a little more than uncomfortable. Facts that I'm sure my mother left out intentionally, and for good reason. And before I forget to mention it, I should tell you that several related photos and newspaper clippings can be seen on our website, ExtremeGenes.com. And once you hear the story, I know you're going to want to see these pieces of memorabilia from nearly 67 years ago. This was how I spent Mother's Day this year, remembering my mom. It blew my mind to find Terry so many years after the fact and hear the full story. All right, that's all in about 7 minutes. Later in the show, of course, Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com is back and talks about preserving audio, whether it's on reel-to-reel tape, cassettes, or records. You know he'll have some great nuggets of wisdom for you. It's time once again for your family histoire news from the pages of ExtremeGenes.com. A major push is underway to locate and collect missing letters to and from George and Martha Washington. After the first president's death, Martha destroyed nearly all of their correspondence. Some historians believe that she did it because she had shared husband George with the public most of their adult lives and felt that these letters, compiled over many decades, were just too private for public consumption. Well, as a result, we have lost a treasure trove of insight into the man given most credit for gaining independence for America. Many of these missing letters have already been located and will be published this summer by the University of Virginia and the Fred W. Smith National Library for the Study of George Washington at Mount Vernon. They anticipate another volume will be released in 2020. Not only is there excitement over what can be learned about George Washington, the man, but also the crucial role played by Martha Washington before, during, and after the Revolution, as well as during Washington's presidency. Professor Edward Lengel, director of the Washington Papers in the University of Virginia, is involved in the project and actually located one of these gems himself. Written on the day of the Battle of Brandywine in 1777, Martha Washington's son wrote to George. But no one, until Lengel came along, noticed the note on the back written by Martha. It opens with the words, "Dear love," and then she goes on to say, "I wrote to you by the last post about a silver cup that I bought, and it weighed 113 ounces. Find the Washington Post link to this fascinating story at extremejeans.com. The U.S. edition of London's The Guardian is carrying a story about a celebration party in Brazil, marking the 150th anniversary of the end of our Civil War. There was fried chicken, barbecue, draft beer, and Lynyrd Skynyrd music. The celebrants were all descendants of Southern soldiers who headed south between 1865 and 1875, taking advantage of Brazil's offers of land grants. While this year's shindig was a big event, it's actually thrown every year and is known as the Confederate Party. Thousands show up in Santa Barbara d'Oeste and the neighboring town of Americana, often dressed in full Confederate military garb and waving Confederate flags. Country music plays and historians revisit the history of their ancestors. One of the partiers, Alcina Tanner Coltre, who is 77, noted that his great-grandfather married a Brazilian woman and quickly adjusted to Brazilian culture, and said that he felt it important that they all remember where they came from. Even American Civil War buffs show up for the party. And that is your Family Histoire news for this week. Read more about this and other stories at extremejeans.com. And coming up next, you'll hear my interview with a friend of my mother's from 1947. This woman and her sister stowed away on a ship to Hawaii late that year, along with two other young women, including my mother. But was their stowing away an accident, as stated in the newspapers of that time? Or was it intentional? You'll hear the real story on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. And welcome back to Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. I am Fisher, the radio root sleuth. And, you know, so many times on this show, we love to talk about people's family histories and how they discovered their various stories. And this is an instance where we're actually going to discover part of my family history by talking to an old friend of my mother. Her name is Terry Chafee, and she met my mother back in, what, 1947, Terry?
The day after Thanksgiving, 47.
Now, the story goes like this, and my mother told this till the day she died just 5 years ago, about the day she went down to a party on a ship in San Francisco. And I feel like I know you, Terry, because I've got all of the clippings of this amazing event, and there were four of you involved in it. You, your sister, a radio partner of my mother, who was in the business at that time on KNBC in San Francisco. And you guys went down for a party on a cruise ship to Hawaii to send off a friend of yours named Eddie Sahadi. Tell us about what happened that day.
Okay. My sister and I went aboard with our two boyfriends, like around 4:30 or 5 for this party.
And you were dancers, right?
We were dancers, and we worked for Eddie Sahadi. He gave a party, and there was probably, I don't know, 30 of us there.
And you were all in your early 20s at this time.
We were all, I don't think any of us was over 22.
Right.
The four of us. The other girl's name was Lori Burke.
Right.
Who was absolutely gorgeous. She looked just like Alice Faye.
Well, may I say, all of you are absolutely gorgeous in the pictures I've seen.
None of us were bad looking. That's true. Anyway, I just said out of the blue, I don't know about the rest of you people here, but I'm staying aboard. So Lori and Marquita called me over and they said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yeah, I think it's a great idea." So Eddie Sahadi's mother was there. And she says, "If I was your age, I would do it." So all of a sudden, the four of us decide that we're all going to go together. So my sister and I walked out with our two boyfriends. And as we walked out the door, Eddie Sahadi was standing there, and he's saying goodbye. I said, would you bet me four tickets that we're going to stay? And he shook my hand.
You are kidding. See, I have never heard this part of it. What did you do with the boyfriends?
My sister and I walked and said goodbye to them.
No. Now, wait a minute. At this time, Marquita had been in movies the year before, all through 1947, and she had this big break to work for KNBC in San Francisco. She had a three-time-a-week radio show with Lori Burke, this other girl you mentioned. And so she basically is wearing the clothes that she would take on this trip and walk away from that job to be on this thing. What were you gals thinking?
Well, I had no idea. I don't remember what your mother had on, but I know that I had a Chapman outfit, which was fantastic, a Persian collar and a gray suit, and we all had high heels.
Right.
And I had hats, and I think most of us had hats.
Yeah, but
I'm
you didn't.
I'm not sure about that.
But you were walking away from other things back in San Francisco.
I do know this. I don't think any of us had the slightest clue we were going to stay aboard.
Well, except that you had this idea. So you're thinking you just didn't believe you were going to go through with it?
I didn't have any idea I was going to do it till I made that stupid statement.
So you decided you were going to stay on the boat. Now, the official story was in the AP. I mean, as you know, the story went all over the country. Your pictures were in the newspapers, pictures of you looking like you were hitchhiking, the four of you with your thumbs out. Another one where the purser is scolding you, shaking his finger at you. But everybody kind of got a kick out of the fact that you girls, somehow missed the whistle that indicated it was time to get off the boat.
Well, yes, that's what we had to tell them. We couldn't tell them we deliberately were stowing away.
Right.
I've never seen the picture with us hitchhiking. That must be with Hawaiian clothes on. We must have done that. I never saw that picture.
I will get all of that to you. I have a letter that you wrote to my mother, Marquita, in 1948, January 9th. It says, here's to Marky. She's a darn fine gal. Dear, remorseful little stowaway. And the fact is, you all knew you were stowaways, but nobody could admit it because you could get in legal trouble, yes?
Well, I mean, we told everybody, but what story
the press
is made up, I don't know. I never even heard that part of the story before.
Well, Marquita had said in the press that basically you all just kind of got disoriented, that you didn't realize that the ship was pulling away.
Yes, right. Yeah, right. We all did say that. But that's
it was the going line to make sure that you stayed out of trouble, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
So anyway, we said goodbye. We knew nothing about a ship. We had no idea where the lifeboats were, but we walked and we found one.
And you were in a lifeboat together.
We were in a lifeboat together.
Oh.
Somebody caught the shoes. Somebody got the bottle of wine. We had cigarettes. So the four of us hid in the lifeboat. But before they took off, we just sat on the seats for a while because no one was out there. And some woman did see us sitting out there, but we quickly ducked. We didn't know if she saw us or not. Now, this is a remarkable part of the story. Every other trip that Mansonia made was usually to either San Francisco to L.A. or L.A. to San Francisco. This trip was L.A. to San Francisco, so we did not go to L.A. We went directly to Hawaii. Otherwise, we would have been taken off the ship in L.A.
Right.
The second thing is we knew nothing about pilot boats. And a pilot boat goes out about 45 minutes after the ship leaves to see if everything's all right. That was another time we could have gotten caught. For some reason, we waited an hour. We all lied down on the lifeboat, and we looked up, and we were underneath the Golden Gate Bridge.
Now, Terry,
wonderful.
I have known this story all of my life, and my mother, as you know, was a great storyteller.
Yes, she was a fabulous gal, fabulous.
Thank you. And
you know, I never told anyone this story until just recently. I haven't really told my kids the whole story. Number one, they wouldn't listen.
Well, here's the thing. She had always told me about being in the lifeboat, okay, and looking up and seeing the Golden Gate Bridge going overhead. The newspaper story quotes her as talking about the Oakland Bay Bridge, which I think you had to go through also, right, from where you were. But I had thought, as I read the newspaper story, she's either exaggerating about being in the lifeboat, or the real story was the one she told to the newspapers, that they just lost track of time and didn't realize that the boat was moving out. And now you have set the record straight that you really were in the lifeboat.
I will set it a little more straight. We did not go under the Oakland Bay Bridge. We only went under the Golden Gate Bridge because the big ships don't go under the Oakland Bridge. They head out to the open ocean. So that part, I would say we only went under one bridge. I only remember going under one bridge.
All right. So let's take it from here. Now, you've been in the lifeboat with the champagne, the cigarettes, the shoes for what, an hour?
Yes. We did stay there a whole hour.
Okay. And at this point,
then we thought it was safe. We got out. It wasn't easy to get out of that lifeboat, now that I think about it. We got out.
So you get out of the lifeboat, and now you're standing. Did anybody see you leave the lifeboat?
We don't know. We don't think so.
Okay.
So we all four went to Eddie Sahadi's door. And he was traveling with a man named Ed Kenyon. Another older man. So we knock on the door, and Sahadi answers the door, and he looks at us, and he always had a sallow skin anyway. He turned green when he saw us.
All four of you at the door?
All four of us at the door, and he brings us all in the room, and then he had stayed in the room, and this Mr. Kenyon, I think his name was Ed Kenyon, I forgot what his name was. Sahadi called me, was down in the dining room, and he said, "Get up here now." He said, "We're in deep trouble."
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to hold it at that for right now, and we're going to come back, and when we do, we're going to talk about what happened next, how the four stowaways wound up meeting the purser. Was the ship's captain involved in this? He had to be.
Everybody was involved.
We got more coming up next on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. And we are back on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. It is Fisher here, the radio root sleuth. And my guest is Terry Chafee. She's a Californian who back in 1947 hopped on a ship for a little party, a send-off party, on a boat that was going to Hawaii, along with my mother. And Mom told me about this story throughout her life, and Terry has confirmed that they were actually stowaways. Yes, on the lifeboat, hidden in there for an hour, watched the Golden Gate Bridge go overhead as they went out to sea from San Francisco, bound for Hawaii. And when we last left this story, Terry, you were knocking on the door of this Eddie Sahadi, the guy you had gone there to see off in the party. You'd given him a little idea that you might be doing this and that he would have to pick up your cabin fees.
Yeah, but only gave him an idea an hour before. He didn't really know about it. He thought I was out of my mind.
And he probably thought you were kidding, too. And yet, here were the four of you at the door going, "Okay, we win the bet." And he says to his buddy, "We're in trouble." Pick it up from there. Now you have to be involved with the crew of the ship. Who did you talk to first?
Well, as I told you, this Kenyon was a very spoiled man. So he picks up the phone and he dials the purser and he says, "I want you to come upstairs here. We have four guests and we have to buy their tickets." And the purser said, "I am the purser of the ship. You come down." We all marched down. All the officers are standing there at full attention, all with grim, grim faces. They took the other two men in the other room. First of all, they kind of dressed them down. And then they came back after they dismissed the two men, and they were smiling and acting like they were playing violins and everything.
Well, you were all four pretty young women, obviously. They were delighted to see you there.
was so funny, the way they treated those two men and how differently they treated this poor girl. So then Kenyon meekly, they got down to business, and they found four different upper berths in the lowest part of the boat, which I think was D-deck. I went to one room with two people, two women I don't know, and I guess my sister went to another, and your mother went to another, and we were all separated. But all I know is the tickets were like, for the four of us, they were like $200 a piece because we were in practically steerage.
Right.
And so that was first night we spent on the berth.
But
so,
the company line then, you told them is you just lost track of time, right, with the party.
Oh, yes. I don't think they asked us too many questions after they got the tickets and put us in at that point.
The story had to make its way around the ship at some point because you kind of became celebrities on board, did you not?
Well, yes, because the next morning, you know, we've got our Thanksgiving clothes on. So Kenyon said there was a ship store. He says, you girls can all go down and buy a pair of slacks and a sweater and socks because they didn't have shoes. So we all went down and got the same pair of slacks and the same sweater and socks for shoes. So we ran around in that outfit the whole 3 or 4 days we were at sea.
Right. I saw where Marquita, my mother, wrote to her family that you only had the set of underwear that you wore onto the ship that day for the whole trip.
Oh, you got to be kidding. Well, that's for sure. That's the positive. So, we won't go into details.
No.
I'm sure we watched them at night. Anyway, so we got those, and then they let us each send a telegram to our mother and Marquita's mother and Marquita's fiance and whoever Lori did. So we got that established. So that's the first day the newspapers knew about it in San Francisco, is that we were stowaways on the boat.
Right, except they weren't accusing you of that because you'd now had your berths paid for.
Well, Dee Dee and I came home together, and they had headlines, Prodigals Return. And
the press now knows that you're stowaways on the ship. Did they actually have somebody on board to interview you?
That was when we landed in Hawaii.
Ah, okay. So that's when things really got crazy, right? First of all, how long was the trip? It was only a few days, right?
I would say 4 days at the max.
Yeah, 4 or 5 days.
3, yes.
Okay.
Then for the last night party, we all made formals out of the shower curtains. If you can believe that.
No, but yes.
And they have the San Jose football team aboard. So this story has, she told you about the FBI following us, right?
Excuse me?
Did she tell you about that the FBI followed us every day we were there?
In Hawaii? No.
Okay. All right. That comes later.
Okay. Now you land in Hawaii. You're at Honolulu.
Yeah, this is the most amazing part of the story. In those days, when you left a ship, someone came, they were like Navy, and asked you where you were going to stay, how you were going to get to your hotel, and all this. So we're talking, this man comes up, and he says, I'm appointed to find out where you girls are going and where you're staying. And we said, well, we don't know where we're staying. And I said, I know one woman on the island. Her name is Valerie Huff, and she was a great friend of the woman we worked for, the dancer. He says, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Selwyn Jenkins, and I'm Valerie Huff's husband. They owned this lovely Colony Surf Hotel, and we got free room with them. All four of us, one big, big room.
Unbelievable.
I mean, the whole story is unbelievable. The next morning when we woke up at the Colony Surf Hotel, a man called us. He says, my name is Dagmar, D-A-G-M-E-R.
Yes, he's the guy who gave you your clothes, right?
Yes. He was a designer, and Joan Crawford had been there the week before, and he had outfitted her. So he said, I'd like to outfit you. Could you come down to where we are? And I happened to answer the phone, and I said, yes, 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 we will be right down there. He gave us each 5 outfits, beautiful outfits, He took us out and bought us sandals for our feet. He bought nail polish. He polished our toenails. And then he took us to the Moana Hotel for the Hawaii calls, the great show that came from Hawaii.
Right.
So we get all dressed and we go down to Hawaii calls. We're walking into where the Banyan Court is, and everybody claps and gets up, and we look over, and there's Sahadi just glaring at us. Hey, I forgot to tell you the best part about the FBI.
What's that?
The last day we're at the Colony Surf, the phone rang, and once again I answered it, and he said, this is the FBI, and we would like to see you all in our office. So we went down to the FBI, shaking in our boots, wondering what was going on. And the man said to us, we've been watching you for 5 days. We've watched every move you made, and we just know that you're 4 stupid girls. And they said, just promise us you'll never do it again.
What a great exclamation point on the story right there.
Yeah. And then, of course, the horrible thing is, all the time while we had this glorious trip, there was one man stowaway that spent all his time in the brig.
No.
Yeah.
And that's how I learned about my mother's crazy adventure, stowing away on a ship in 1947. By the way, the whole thing with the FBI, that's because the man they went to see off, apparently he was quite a shady businessman. I think Mom was a little naive back then. And coming up next, we'll be talking audio preservation with our preservation authority, Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com on Extreme Jeans, America's Family History Show. Hey, welcome back to Extreme Jeans, America's Family History Show. It is Fisher here with Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. He is our preservation authority. And today we're talking about something near and dear to my heart, Tom, audio.
Exactly.
And you know, it's fun because there are some old recordings and tapes that can take you way back, sometimes even before video or maybe just something separate from it. And but just like the video, these things deteriorate as well, and we got to get them saved.
And audio is so important. So many people push it off. In fact, when I got my audio engineering degree, I only went after that because I was in broadcasting and everybody's always, oh, fix it in the mix. Don't worry about the audio. And I thought, that makes
really?
No sense. Yeah. So I went to Full Sail University in Florida and learned about audio and found out how important it is. And if you don't believe me, sit down and watch a movie and mute it and then watch it for 10 minutes. Then do the same thing. Then just close your eyes and listen to it for 10 minutes and tell me which one was more enjoyable.
Yeah, that's right. The audio makes a huge difference.
Yep.
I'm very fortunate that back in the late 50s, a friend of my mother's came by, and he was in from out of town in Connecticut, and he recorded us to take back to my mother's mother in Oregon. And so I have this tape of me being interviewed for like 5-10 minutes back in 1958 when I was 4 years old.
Wow.
And it's a treasure to hear my dad talking to me and asking me these simple questions and about the neighbors and things that happened at Christmas time and say hi to grandma. And then a few years later, there was an interview done by a radio station with my dad about his career with the Ed Sullivan Show. And so I have that, which is priceless as well. So I have these two recordings. Dad passed away in the 70s, so it's the only recordings of his voice that I have, and they are absolutely priceless to me.
And there's so many things that are like that that are just so important. That's why when you clean out Mom and Dad's house after they pass away, don't throw stuff away. Any kind of genealogy-related stuff, audio recordings, video, film, don't throw them away because you never know what hidden treasures are in there. You want to look at everything. And we even have people come into our store that goes, hey, I got all this stuff from Grandma and Grandpa's house, all these photographs. We don't know who half these people are, so I'm just going to throw them away. I go, no. Give them to me. Donate it to me. I'll scan them. One day we'll be able to find somebody. Just like you've had success in your life, finding pictures that we don't know who they belong to. You had somebody on a little while ago that found an old picture that was on eBay. And they were selling for a few $100s and found out that it was priceless. It was the only one.
Yes, it was worth 6 figures.
Yeah. I mean, stuff like that's incredible. You're not just doing it for the money. You want to preserve this stuff. And so it's so important to get this, whether it's the old wire recordings, whether it's wax recordings, vinyl records, all these kind of things. We have people constantly call us and say, hey, I've got an old vinyl recording of my dad going off to war. Is there anything I can do with it?
And is this when they went into the booth?
Exactly.
And was it a dime or something? Yep. And you could record for 5 minutes?
Yep. I remember even clear back when my brother went off to boot camp in Vietnam, I remember hanging out at the train station where he was going to go. You pop a dime or a quarter into it and make a record. And stuff like that is so priceless. Even if they're kind of damaged, a lot of times we can get sound off of them. And as technology is growing so fast, I think in the future there somebody's going to come out with a way, with a laser, that you can read a record that's like broken or damaged or cracked, where a needle is not going to work because it's going to get stuck in the cracks, it's going to pop out, it's going to be all kinds of problems. But the way laser technology is coming, I think one day you're going to be able to shoot a record with a laser, pop it into a 3D printer, and make a new record without all the scratches and stuff in it.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because you'll have this 3D image of it, and you can go in with your cursor and basically fix the tracks. There's a scratch here, so you kind of figure out, okay, just like with digital, you have zeros and ones. Okay, there's a couple of zeros missing. What really goes here? Are they zeros or are they ones? You can kind of figure it out and play around with it. And then once you get that 3D record transferred into your hard drive, then you can go in and with your ears listen. This sounds wrong. Let me fix this. Let me do this. Let me do this. And so the next segment, I want to kind of help people, once you've got all this audio stuff down, how you can get other people to listen to it, like we talked about last week, how you're going to get people to watch your old videos. I am just really amazed that we have more and more and more audio come in every single day. It's not slowing down. It's getting more and more and more. In fact, I was telling you off the air, it's almost going to pass videotapes now, the amount of audio that we're getting in right now.
Why do you incredible. Think that is?
I think a lot of people are just finding it in grandma and grandpa's and mom and dad's attic where they never even knew it existed.
Cassettes, a lot of that.
Mostly cassettes.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely. And a lot of it is funerals. A lot of it is mom and dad just talking. Sometimes they had the old cassette players weren't very expensive. And at Christmas time, they just hit record and ran it during the whole thing.
And mailed it to somebody.
Exactly. And that was a big one, is back in the day, a lot of people, they would record on a tape, send it to their kids that were in the military or on a mission or whatever.
College.
And then all those things. And then they would listen to it. And then, unfortunately, usually they would record over it and send it back. They'd use the same tape.
Yes.
But some people didn't do that. They kept the tape, so they'd send them to their son. And their son would never send it back to them. So they'd send another one to their son. And their son smartly kept them all and didn't put the Rolling Stones over them or something. And kept those. And people are finding these and having them turned into CDs. And one thing for you new genies out there that haven't been with us for a long time, make sure whether you're using CDs or DVDs, you use good quality discs. And I recommend Tile Udens, which you can buy online. You can buy them from us. Mass retailers don't sell them because Tile Uden won't sell them to the mass retailers. They'll only sell them to people online, smaller shops like ourselves. But make sure you get those. They cost a little bit more, which isn't a ton. Like a DVD, if you buy one, they're a buck. CDs are like 60 cents if you buy one. You buy a spin a little 50, they're really cheap. So get good quality discs, because you can get a disc and in 3 years it won't play anymore because the die in it broke down. So make sure you get good quality discs. Get your stuff transferred, whether we do it or our competitor does it or anybody. Just get it done. Get it on a CD so you can share them. Now, once you've got them on a CD, don't just hand them out to your family. Say, oh, yeah, this is grandpa's funeral or this is da-da-da-da-da-da. Because 9 out of 10 times they're going to put it in, start listening to it, and they're not even going to recognize who the heck this person is that's talking. And it's going to get boring. They're going to turn it off, and they're never going to play it again. What you need to do, like we've talked before with video, make an index. Go through it one time and write down, okay, it starts out with prelude music. So the clergyman speaking, you're going to have to explain, oh, they were really close to grandma or grandpa, whoever it is, whose funeral it is. Tell them the relationship they had. Then somebody else is going to talk, which could be a neighbor, and say, oh, this is one of the neighbors. Oh, this is his uncle, and this is a relationship. This is a cousin speaking. Then this is, you know, mom speaking or whatever.
Just project yourself 50 years from now. If you listen to this, would this mean anything? It's like an unmarked photograph.
Exactly.
The same problem, right?
Right.
Who wants an old photo? It doesn't matter that it was done in 1894.
Right. And the things with even with old photographs, you can say, don't know them, don't know them, don't know them, don't know them. At least you can go through them. But audio, nobody's going to sit down and listen to an hour funeral having no idea who these people are and, you know, what their relation was to grandma or grandpa or whoever it is. And so you need to go and put some kind of an index so they can go, oh, I remember Uncle Ed. Let me go listen to Uncle Ed's part. And do these kind of things, put an index with it. Then when you distribute it, people are going to sit and listen to it and enjoy it.
And let me suggest also that you transcribe the important tapes, because at some point you might actually lose that recording. That
exactly.
Digital thing might go away. But at least if you have a transcription of what was on it, that will be preserved. All right. Great stuff, Tom. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
That wraps it up for this week. And thanks once again to Terry Chafee, my mother's old friend from 1947, stowed away on a ship with her to Hawaii. If you didn't catch that visit and all the information she shared with me, get on our website, extremejeans.com, and catch the podcast in the coming week. Take care. We'll see you again next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.
This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org.